It's like expertise accrued in one area, we assume transfers to every other area.
Right.
Which is why someone who plays second base for the Yankees knows all about shaving cream.
Right.
Welcome to Darwin Denied, the essential bookshelf. We are going through various books, reviewing a book a session where issues relevant to the creation-evolution debate are treated. And my name is Douglas Wilson. This is my brother, Dr. Gordon Wilson. The book that we have chosen for today is Undeniable by Douglas Axe. The subtitle reads, How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life is Designed. So what I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes talking about what I believe is the central takeaway point of this book, and then we can discuss amongst ourselves and go back and forth. I thought this was a marvelous book. The central point that I think that you can take away from this book that is unique to this book is Douglas Axe makes a distinction between technical science and what he calls common science. Technical science and common science. Too often in the creation evolution debate, you have technical scientists thinking that the alternative to technical science is scientific ignorance.
Yeah.
Right. So either you're one of the elite experts or you're a schlub who needs to sit down.
a troglodyte
who needs to sit down and listen, defer to the experts. And Douglas Axe is clearly a scientist at the top of his game.
Top-notch institutions.
Yeah, he really knows this stuff. And for someone who is a top-drawer scientist, he speaks to the non-scientist in genuinely non-patronizing terms.
Right.
So what he is doing is saying that everybody does science all the time.
It's just not quantitative. It's very intuitive.
Right. It's intuitive. That's why how biology confirms our intuition that life is designed. So everybody is an intuitive scientist.
Right.
What he calls common science, common sense, common science. And mm-hmm. he believes that commoners can follow the basic arguments and can resolve and adjudicate the fundamental issues at stake in these scientific debates for themselves using the brain that God gave them. Mm-hmm. So he talks about open science, common science, and he believes that there's a place, an essential place for the technical scientist. He is mm-hmm. one of these technical scientists. And it's a necessary place. It's a God-given role that we should pursue, but it's not the elite versus the ignorant.
Right.
It's the structure of the argument. So basically, he says a technical scientist can get into the corners and all the details.
Right.
But if he knows what he's doing, he can then reduce what he just discovered in the lab to common ordinary language
right.
and say, "This is what I've found out," and an ordinary layperson, scientific layperson, can follow that argument and make a responsible decision mm-hmm. on what he thinks about what's going on,
right.
based on that that argument presented. So mm-hmm. that's the. I thought this was, and he gives a number of examples of how it, life could not be our right. intuition that life. Can't organize itself is a true intuition.
Right.
I love this summary. He says, according to the universal design intuition, tasks that we would need knowledge to accomplish can be accomplished only by someone who has that knowledge.
Right. That's the key quote.
That's the key quote. If it takes knowledge to do it and it was done, then someone knew how to do it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Now, there's a quibble I'm going to have with this book later on in our discussion, but let me kick this to you, Gordon.
Sure. Well, I didn't know if you had a question for me, but
I will in a minute.
I think it's an excellent book, And the quibbles I have are just mostly rhetorical, because I think some of his examples, I'd give it a 4.5 star, only not because there's any flaw in the argument, but because some of his examples were sort of clunky, mm-hmm. and I would have picked a different example that was a little bit more accessible. In some cases, his examples were really, really good, and I was thinking, okay, not only is it valid, but I can follow it, and I think any layperson can. But besides that, I just think it's an incredibly good book. There's everywhere you turn, whether you see some inanimate object that was designed, whether it's a table or a terrarium or even some of the models in my cabinet behind us. I think of the kidney up there at the top, that plastic kidney at the top. We know that that was designed, and it is a static model representing a human kidney. And we say, well, that's obviously been manufactured by people who knew how to imitate a kidney in terms of its shape and all of the internal specifics, but it doesn't work. And a real kidney, which is smaller but actually works,
does
the job and cleans your blood, that is supposedly came about by chance. And so I really like the fact that he says to the common layperson, and doesn't isn't condescending, and says, "You, your intuition is right on the money." And as I think you said once before, that the theory of evolution is the kind of stupidity that appeals to the highly educated.
Yes,
I think you said something like that. And nothing could that just is very, very true. All of my, people that trained me up in the theory of evolution, very, very, very smart people, and yet because people, including scientists, are herd animals. And Doug Axe brings this out when he just. And the lab that he was at in Cambridge, which was the same lab that Watson and Crick discovered the structure of DNA, you know, he was interacting with a Jedi master of molecular biology. And he realized that when he saw the implications of Douglas Axe's paper, he could see a tension mounting in his mind. And it just shows you that scientists are
people.
And when you've got 160 years of scientific consensus and inertia, and all of the brick and mortar buildings of the scientific establishment, not only in this country, but just about every kind in any country that has scientific departments, it's just all built around, at least biology for sure, built around this idea of evolution. When you look at that kind of inertia, it's really, really hard. You really have to just blow all of that away. It's more of a sociological peer pressure more than anything else. And you have to just look at the data and go, you know what? The emperor has no clothes.
Even if you're a scientific layman, Axe is pointing to the fact that you have the right. You have the right and the responsibility to analyze the argument.
Yeah. And that's why most people, even when they've been publicly educated and the state has tried very hard to inculcate evolution into the noggins of everybody, and yet most people still can't shake the belief that there's a God. Now, they just think, well, if they still retain some kind of theism and they say, well, you know, I guess evolution's true, but they just can't shake the idea that it all happened completely without God.
So to illustrate this scientific layman point that I think he's making, and I really appreciate him making. A few decades ago, there was a very, very famous book, Cosmos, by Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. And Sagan was an astronomer at Cornell, I think, and he's now deceased. But that book, Cosmos, begins with a statement that runs something like, the cosmos is all that ever was or ever will be, which is a materialistic
faith
statement. Mm-hmm. And it was a materialistic statement that Sagan did not discover by looking through his telescope. Mm-hmm. it had nothing to do with astronomy. Astronomy was his area of expertise. And I know, for example, as a non-astronomer, if I were to be given a tour of his observatory, of where he did his work, on the technical side of astronomy, he would be vastly my superior. I wouldn't pretend to tell him what end of the telescope to look in. So he's an astronomer. He's trained in that. That's his technical proficiency. But when he says, when he starts his book off by saying, the cosmos is all that ever was or ever will be, that's not astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
That's philosophy.
Right.
I've got a degree in philosophy. he doesn't have a degree in philosophy, and he's encroaching on my territory.
Right.
And so it's the illustration I've used before is it's like a mathematician walks into a greasy spoon diner and orders 3 eggs over easy, and a few minutes later he gets 2 eggs out over hard, and he complains to the cook, and the cook comes out and says, "Look, bub, I'm the cook. I've been slinging hash here for 30 years. Don't tell me how to do my job. I'm the cook." The mathematician would say, "Yes, but I'm the mathematician." And this is an area where our disciplines overlap. I ordered 3 eggs. You gave me 2 eggs.
Right.
I'm a mathematician. I can count the eggs.
Right.
I know that that's a philosophical mm-hmm. statement that all that exists is matter.
Right.
He's not, and he should not be somehow immune from people who are not technical astronomers.
Right.
It's like a expertise accrued in one area, we assume transfers to every other area,
right?
Which is why someone who plays second base for the Yankees knows all about shaving cream, you know,
right?
Or snow tires,
right?
I throw throw to first base, and therefore I can tell you what tires to get,
right?
Well, that's there's a fallacy in there,
right?
So let me get to my quibble, and this is a statement about this Darwin Denied series. We're reviewing a book a session, and the books that we're reviewing roughly will fall into 3 categories. There'll be books by critics of Darwin or observers of the scientific world, Nagel, Mind and Cosmos, Denton's Evolution Theory and Crisis. They're not intelligent design guys, and they're not creationists. They're just honest critics of Darwin.
Right.
So that's one, or honest reporters of the facts that will impinge on Darwinism. So there's mm-hmm. that kind of book. Then there's the intelligent design camp.
Right.
And then there's the creationist camp. So there's the honest critic, ID, intelligent design, and creationist.
Right.
My one quibble. Doug Axe, this book, and I profit much from the intelligent design movement.
Right.
You know, 2.5 cheers, 3 cheers. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of good work.
Right.
But there, I do have one quibble with the ID argument, and that is he has a short section where he says the creationist starts with a certain faith in the Bible and biblical accounts, and then goes looking for data to support it. Well, that's I think that's a tad simplistic. But if you just start with scientific reasoning and you proceed to an argument for a designer, the liver was designed, or this mm-hmm. this artifact was designed, but we're not saying it's who designed it. We're just saying that it's designed. The problem with that is if we discovered that the designer of the of the liver, or the designer of the cell, or the designer of the engineering that went into wrists, for example, were a race of super aliens from the other side of the galaxy. And they were the ones who designed this. If we discovered that, they are also themselves artifacts.
They're physical.
They're physical.
They're part of the cosmos.
They're part of the cosmos. And the thing that they made exhibits design, but they also exhibit design as massively intelligent designers. So as long as you're operating in this world, in this cosmos, in the space-time continuum, if you postulate that the designer is anything less than God, then that designer requires an explanation.
Yeah, and it, and even when you paint Dawkins into a corner, like on that movie Expelled, where he even concedes that okay, maybe aliens made us, but then he would say that naturalistic processes made the aliens. Well, let's just, if you have an infinite, well, who made those aliens? Well, super aliens. Who made those super aliens? Super duper aliens.
It's turtles all the way down.
And pretty soon you're bumping up against the time frame of the known universe based on the old Earth assumptions of 13.7 billion. And if you've got an infinite regression of aliens getting more and more and more and more intelligent, more and more and more complex, more and more and more powerful, then you've now amplified the problem from going from the Big Bang to super duper uber aliens in a very, very short time.
Yeah.
And so let's just cut through the fat and say, okay, let's avoid that kind of reasoning, because there are ID people that say, okay, the intelligence was from
God.
They'll say aliens. And let's just say, well, that just pushes the question back, and you're not really addressing the fundamental problem, which is that you need to have a transcendent creator outside of the cosmos that created everything. I like about books like this, whether it's Behe's book or Douglas Axe's book, is that he's getting down into the level of information, of specified complexity. And we are very familiar with it in things like written text, hieroglyphics, any kind of, or computer code. Even if you're not a biologist and you understand language or code, you realize that this is highly specified symbols of some sort, whether it's alphabetic letters or ones and zeros, that specify some kind of code. And people that don't know any biology, which is fine, need to realize that there are very, very, very good analogies in our world of information that correspond to that. And we all know that he talks about the oracle soup or alphabet soup. And, you know, when you're talking about, say, and comparing the alphabet soup with a bunch of little pasta noodles that are shaped like alphabetic letters in this bowl, and just the currents of the broth knocking the noodles around on the surface spell out very detailed instructions on how to build something. I forget what he says. So we know immediately that sequence of noodles didn't just happen by the currents and the chemistry of noodles. And
the cook is playing a joke on you.
Yeah, or if you even in a roommate situation where you just get up out of the room and come back a few minutes later and your bowl of alphabet soup has spelled nice and neatly on the surface, you're late for class, you immediately know in that simple string of letters that these noodles didn't arrange themselves. Now, something about the naturalistic mindset says that the laws of chemistry, Nothing in the soup violates the laws of chemistry in the sense of the noodles are have a lower density than the broth, so they're floating. Right. That's natural. The noodles are can stick together. That's natural. So there's nothing supernatural about how those noodles are arranged. But we do know that even though there's no physical laws violated, we do know that information went into arranging those noodles. The same way we know that the text on this on these pages don't violate any laws of chemistry.
Right.
The toner sticks to the paper, and nothing's violated there. But what the Darwinists is missing is that they think that the laws of chemistry can put together nucleotides, which are the building blocks of DNA,
they think that information is made out of matter.
Yeah, well, information can be. It can be the medium.
Matter conveys information,
but it's not information.
Right.
So actually, you can have a sequence of DNA that's not informational. It can be gibberish arrangement of nucleotide letters, and it just no information there at all. No code. It's just gibberish. And so, when you have information, we know that that did not happen. The probability is so, I mean, this is the sticky thing about low probabilities. They think, well, there's a chance. But there's certain levels of probability that are impossible. I mean, once you get down to these fantastically large numbers, you realize that it's beyond way beyond the reach of chance.
What the materialist is doing is saying they're falling into the fallacy of nothing buttery.
Mm-hmm.
So they say on this cover, there's nothing but paper and ink. There's nothing mm-hmm. but paper and ink. And if you subjected it to microscopic analysis, they're correct. There's nothing, you can't find anything here but paper and ink.
And some interesting chemicals that make the
right.
cover
and
cool.
the grease
and the wax and yeah. whatever.
Yeah. So that's the fallacy of nothing buttery. But we would say there's a word undeniable here, and you could take those letters and rearrange them into gibberish, and information wouldn't be there.
Right. And it's not going to weigh any less.
It's not going to weigh any less or any more. And so information is spiritual.
It's a
slash not material.
It's a non-material thing.
Non-material right. reality,
mm-hmm.
and. And so we know that information is a non-material spiritual reality mm-hmm. that is very much a part of the observable world around
right.
us. So we can see the information as clearly as we can see the molecules.
Right. Right.
Right.
One thing about the some people will you can give them a really astronomically low probability like with hundreds of zeros after it, and they'll say, well, there's still a chance. And they don't really quite get it because just let's go to something, something tragic like 9/11. When the first airliner hit a trade tower, a lot of people could have legitimately said, you know, after they
horrible
recovered,
accident.
They'll say, okay, that what a tragic accident. Now, the probability of an airliner hitting a trade tower is very, very low, but still, okay, that could have been an accident. Now, when the second one hit within an hour, then everybody knows it's designed.
Right.
Okay. And they don't have to know who. They just need to know that it's such a low probability that two airliners hitting two trade towers within an hour. That doesn't happen by chance. Now, those probabilities, now, if the Homeland Security or whoever was in charge at the time said, not so fast, let's figure out the probability mm-hmm. of it happening by complete accident, he would be fired or she would be fired so fast,
right.
it would be funny. Because when you get down to those low numbers and it's, we just, it's irrational to assume that it happened by chance.
Exactly. All right, so this book, Douglas Axe, Undeniable, it's published by Harper One. Incidentally, let me make a comment about that. Harper One is a major publishing house. This is another indicator. It's not a creationist press. It's
right. It's an intelligent design. Well, no, not
Harper One.
No, right.
Harper One is just a secular publishing house.
Right.
And the fact that this kind of book is appearing with this kind of imprint is an indication that the cracks in the dam are are widening. So
another point is that World Magazine
Book of the Year.
So
Douglas Axe, Undeniable, very good book. I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You think of yourself now, and then in 4 years' time, what do you want yourself to look like? And is the education that you're considering going to help you get to that place?
When you're a student, you want to become like your teacher. You're going to become like your teacher. Looking at NSA beforehand, I knew I wanted to become like the men who are teaching here.
Fireman, husband, father, doctor, no matter where you want to go, NSA is just such good preparation for the person that you want to be.
If you want to be an effective Christian, you need to be able to lead and shape culture. If you want to do that, no matter what your occupation is, you need to shape yourself, prepare yourself as a person for that job. And liberal arts is, I think, the best education you can have for that.
To learn more, check us out online at nsa.edu.